Good morning, I'm David Ellis. Yes, it's me. I sound nasal, but it's me, the real McCoy, I suppose you can say. We're going until 1 o'clock today. You might have heard that earlier from Dennis Johnson. And therefore, in these hours, I want you to take maximum advantage of the opportunity to share your perspective on what is going on. And quite a lot has been going on. We are now into the second month of the year. It's the second day of February. All of a sudden, January has just gone in a flash. And whether you like it or not, elections are coming. No matter how long you think you have to wait, in next to no time, we will be going to the polls in Barbados. But before then, I know you got a lot to say. In the past month, nothing has dominated the news more than the South Coast Sewage Project here in Barbados. We wait to see whether, by the time we go to the polls, there will be a fix for that. The central bank governor has just delivered his report on the state of the economy. Some good news, some bad news, but the bad news is particularly alarming. More so because it is part of a trend. And what we do know is that even if we got an injection of money now to stem that particular flow, that downward slide, it would not address the fundamental issue, which is what is causing the slide. And that no matter what we do, Barbados has to confront that which is unsustainable. I think we should all know that by now. And making silly comments to the effect that no matter what, the situation will have to continue like this, that's not correct. Somebody has to take the action. Of course, I think anybody who is smart about what is going on in Barbados would know quite well that the sooner you took the action, the better. And therefore, the whole idea of pushing elections down and down and down to the wire while the place is in this state with respect to the economy, which calls for urgent action, and you have heard so many people call for that, makes one wonder who is listening. And where's their head and where's the head, or where are the heads of the other people who are making the call? But, you know, that's my opening thought on that aspect of it. The program is not about me, it's about you. And I know that a lot of you got your hearts hooked on your political party. I know a lot of you got your emotions all wrapped up in this personality and that personality. And that no matter what the reality is, you're going to come here today to justify who you support, and you will tell me why you support what they say and what they do. And you know my position. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I am not here to tell you what to say. I'm here to hear you, and if necessary, to challenge you, or to find somebody else to challenge you. So let's go. Who's first on the line? Who's taking me on today? Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Park the car. It sounds as though you're reversing the car.
Yeah, hey, partner. How are you doing?
Yes, I'm well, and you?
Good morning.
Yes.
Okay, for now. You know, you're talking about the...
I'm talking about anything in particular. I'm talking about anything you want to talk about.
I'm just fed up.
Fed up about what?
I ordered some things online.
Mm-hmm.
To bring to a certain company. We'll not call it.
Don't call the name yet.
No, please. But I got charged from the company for bringing in the things online. I paid the 2% tax. when they ordered the thing the same time. When they went to collect this morning, another 2% tax, along with...
So what was this additional 2% tax for? So according to what you're saying.
This thing, environmental levy, then I have to pay the NSRL. So I got, it came in three different boxes.
It came in three different boxes?
Yes, one box.
So it is one order in three different boxes?
Yes, sir.
And it's not three different orders?
No, sir. I ordered them one time, so I paid the 2% tax that same thing. Then I came in, I seen paying for the weight. It's just two pairs of shoes. I'm a barber. I cut from home.
Okay.
So I bought blades. I like to keep my machines clean. Mm-hmm. I bought blades, and it was only like six blades. And blades are not heavy. It's not like it was importing a washing machine.
So it's six blades. And what else?
A six blades, two pairs of sneakers.
What kind of sneakers? You know, sneakers could be really expensive sometimes.
You only paid $100 US for the shoes.
You pay $100 US for the shoes, but if your shoes are really expensive, you could go to a flea market and pay $100 US for them, and when they get here, they could still be valued at more.
Mm. So,
look at their brand name shoes.
Pair of Nikes.
Nikes?
Yes, sir.
And therefore, if you bought a pair of Nikes at $100 US, you would consider that to be a steal of a deal, right? Yeah, right? Yeah. We agree on that, right? So the true value of the shoes would be higher.
So I don't understand why people selling them for $600 or $800.
Oh, you understand, right? So let's recognize that. Because what?
If you have to pay all these taxes just to get them here, obviously as a store owner has to pay back his money.
Fair enough. So, in all, tell me, you expected to pay what in taxes originally, based upon what you got?
I would have expected to pay $300 for everything to bring them out. So when I got there, the $600 was a shock. I understand that you have to pay your taxes. I pay all my real tax.
You expected to pay $300 in taxes for the razor, for the blades and the two pairs of shoes?
The shoes.
Right. How much money in taxes you ended up paying instead?
$628
and 36 cents?
32 cents.
32 cents?
That's true.
Okay. And normally in Barbados, you would have paid $600 for a pair of Nikes.
I don't spend my money well. I work hard.
Right, fair enough. So you try to get around having to spend that kind of money. So you're shocked. You're shocked to find that you've had to pay that amount. But that's not what really hurts you. You're suggesting to me that you paid one particular tax more than once.
Yes, sir. I'm seeing it here on the receipt again, 2% after I paid it already.
And when you raised this issue with the people involved, what did they tell you?
Can't do anything about it.
Oh, why? You say to them, look, you are charging me this 2% tax. This is a commission on foreign exchange, right?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. I understand as long.
Right. So you've said to them, look, you've already charged me for this. Why am I being charged twice? And they tell you they can do nothing about it? That's the best answer they give you?
No reason why.
They said what?
They said, no reason why I'm getting it again. Just can't do nothing about it.
No, that doesn't make sense. If you, in your judgment, and you have evidence to support it, that you've been charged twice, then with whom did you speak in the company on the matter?
The company that I brought it through.
The manager, the owner, the clerk, the who?
I spoke to the manager.
You spoke to the manager?
Yes,
well, I think that it is appropriate for you to write to the manager rather than just speaking and send the evidence to support your claim that they have charged you twice. That's not on. And the government is supposed to have an office to protect people from situations where they believe that they're getting their ID jerk out. I would hope that calling that office, I think it is the Office of Public Counsel in Barbados, then, somebody tells me that I should ask you if the shipment came through the airport or the seaport. I don't know what I got to do with being charged twice in that regard. That to me, that doesn't make sense. There needs to be an explanation as to why you paid the 2% commission twice. All right? Whether it goes through a broker or whoever, then to me, there's got to be some explanation for that. But what was the commission, the 2% commission on it though? Because you paid $600.
There's so many papers. I can't find that particular one where it says I'm looking.
I think that's important to know. But as I suggested to you, I mean, we won't be able to solve the problem here. But I strongly recommend that you write to the company and get them to explain what has happened. Somebody says here that you should send a picture of the receipt. You would have paid the 2% commission to the online supplier from whom you purchased the goods. Okay, then.
Very frustrated.
I understand your frustration. Down to brass tacks. Hello, good morning.
Thanks.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Hillis. How are you? Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. May I ask you, how are you keeping?
I'm okay, and you?
Not too bad. I noticed that you're very excited about elections. But I haven't heard you make any comments about the candidates you have saw in the Sanderson paper that we should be contesting the next general election, and there's a lot of candidates. I was looking really to hear a response from you.
To what effect, my friend?
What chances do you think these new parties have of at least getting 2 or 3 seats? And which constituencies you think it will most
likely... Listen, first of all, I don't know a lot about the candidates that have just come on the scene. I would expect that any new political party would have a more difficult task than the two established political parties. There's a trend in Barbados that I have noticed over the years that suggests to me that Barbadians have been averse over the years to go and vote for a third party in this country. But there's a large body of Barbadians who are disenchanted with the establishment, the political establishment, the Barbados Labour Party and the Democratic Labour Party. I can only wait to see how they will respond to these new parties. Things are different. I saw one of the new parties the other evening seeking to outline their policy on a matter via Facebook Live. You know, there are people who are no longer interested in going and sitting and standing up in the dew to listen to any political meeting, but they are not averse to going online and checking what you're saying. So to what extent will that make a difference to new political parties in Barbados? Will it attract younger people in significant enough numbers that it could make a difference? In other words, there are too many variables for me to come here telling you whether I think they will win or not. I am not going to tell you that they should be dismissed at all. I think there's an important role that they can play, even if they do not win seats. We need their voices to be added to those that are calling for significant change and accountability. And in the absence of having a vibrant non-governmental culture where this is demanded, then we have to depend heavily upon political voices to do it.
Listen, there were two seats that I'm interested in, which I know the Barbados Party is going to get anyhow. So Michael Northeast, which is by the opposition leader. Now, there's two people running in there, but it actually should be three. It should be four people in there, but one was not mentioned. That would be Mr. Todd Patrick, Todd, Mr. Hart, Mia Moore Motley, and Mrs. Canterbury. And then there's St. Thomas. It should be four again. But what is interesting taking place in St. Michael Northeast, I found that the gentleman, Mr. Hart, his name is, he's getting a lot of support. People like his ideas, the ideas of the party. I think he belongs to the basis people. I'm not sure. But people like his ideas that they're coming in, free taxes.
Well, who tells me that it is what you're saying is quite possible. Mm-hmm. But it is also quite possible that you are a supporter of one of these parties or the other and that you are here to spout propaganda on behalf of one or the other.
I do support a third party, which you already know, the Social Democrats. And we will not be let's say going on the campaign trail, but what we do, we be drawing the lights to some of these new parties, giving them ideas of how to go about with their campaign.
I know how a lot of these candidates start out. They start out initially with a new political party, and in the next election, you see them joining forces with one of either the BLP or the DLP. A lot of them do that. You know, because a run like this could expose to you that you have a little bit of appeal, but your party might not have enough it may not pose enough of a threat to the two established parties to get you where you want to go.
I agree, but Mr. Ellis, you know, there's something that you're missing too.
What's
if
that?
The Democratic Labour Party supporters come out and vote for the Democratic Labour Party, let's assume that these fellows, that these third parties, will take away some of the votes. It might not be that many in certain constituencies, right? It means that the Democratic Labour Party still have a good chance of retaining this government, you know, before they talk on this radio station.
That's true.
People fed up on the topic. Up to last week, the Democratic Labour Party, I was talking to some members of the Democratic Labour Party, and they don't know. Interesting, they tell you if you want your party to retain the government, you're going to have to go on vote. You all have more supporters than the Barbados Labour Party.
But you got to come to terms with why they are reluctant to vote.
Because of the situation in the country at the present moment.
Because of their own assessment of how the Democratic Labour Party has led the country. And if that's their assessment, you know, that will play a role in what happens at the end of the election process.
But I am hearing over.
But I don't, you know, what I have a difficulty with, though? I have a difficulty with this kind of sterile discussion about who is likely to win. You like that discussion because that's empty. And you don't have a difficulty with such emptiness.
No,
I do. My difficulty is that I prefer to deal with specific aspects of life in this country that could ultimately help influence people to vote one way or the other. In other words, something like, let's not deal with the South Coast issue. Let's deal with the brawl on the bus that they had the other morning. And the degree to which I have seen some impassioned contributions online about what is happening among our young people, about aggression. And then I saw somebody, I think it was Dr. Barreto from the University of the West Indies, talking about factors that are influencing young people's behavior, the need for guidance counselors. And then when you say give more guidance counselors to the schools, you still have to deal with where's the money going to come from? What are you going to cut to be able to do that? These are the practical issues that we must confront. And then you must come to the political parties and ask the question of these parties, on whom do you believe you can rely to fix these problems?
You mean to fix the problem of children fighting on the bus?
to fix the culture, to fix the factors that are influencing the behavior, to start talking about what you may be able to do within the system.
Mm-hmm. You're just ready to
address those things.
You just heard the news. I think it was yesterday when a 12-year-old girl shot to school in the States. You are aware that January there was over 130 murders in Jamaica. So we are not that bad as some people walked upon.
That's true. I mean, we could also go to Jamaica and St. Lucia. I was listening to a discussion this week in Jamaica, where they were talking, a man was saying, but you know, I haven't had my garbage picked up for 2 months. And the representative said, no, not two, it's only one. You know, and I mean, we could say, but that don't happen here. We don't have garbage, generally speaking, out for 2 months. It's only for a month. It's only 3 weeks. You know, a maximum of three or two, you know. So we can always look around this region and look around the world for every problem that we see. We could always find somebody out there who's got it worse. All we got to do is Google it. Once you Google it, it is going to come up. And you can say, but, oh boy, what are you fellas out here keeping so much noise for? Look, it could be worse. You could be in one of the one of the migration camps in France or in Libya. As a matter of fact, you could be sold as a slave somewhere else, Morocco. You know, so why are Bajans complaining? You have nothing to complain about. You're better off than this person and that person. Down to brass tacks. The guy who called just now about this matter of the... He feels that he was double charged with the NSRL. I'm getting some feedback here from people online. Somebody says the freight forwarder who delivered the goods to him is unlikely to have charged the FX Commission. He would have been charged the NSRL as part of the customs duty for the shipment, which would also include excise tax and import duty. So that's what one person says. And then they suggest that you should call this guy here, Mr. Hunt, at 622-3089, and explain this matter to him. He says, the person who has written on it says he can help with those matters. This is down to brass tacks. Wow, there's this story out of Texas where a former accountant condemned for fatally shooting his two young daughters while their mother listened helplessly on the phone. He was put to death last night. But before he did so, he taunted the woman one last time. Now, the children were 9 years old and 6 years old at the time in May of 2001. He and his wife had been separated, and he shot the girls at his apartment during a scheduled visit. He asked the warden if the warden asked him if he had a final statement, and he said no, but then he changed his mind. And he said, well, hi, Mary Jean. And he was looking and smiling at his wife. I'll see you all later. Bye, he says. And then a few seconds later, he opened his eyes and lifted his head and asked, well, am I still alive? So people do some stuff. I mean, Texas dad, down to brass tacks. You're on the air.
David?
Hello.
A blessed good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. The brave one. The brave one.
Who's that there, the brave one?
You.
All right, David. I got some searchy bush here and some lemongrass mixed up for you.
Yeah?
So when you're ready, you can come for it. And if you don't want that, they got something that you can go and get a prescription called Remedy. It works very well because it's got some very bad sinuses as well. R-E-M-I-D-I-N-E.
You're a doctor now?
No, I'm not a doctor. But if I can help somebody that I appreciate, I will do that from my heart. I dare tell you that.
But you could only be a doctor because you don't prescribe medicine for people unless you know what their health, what their conditions
are. Right now I can hear that you have serious challenges with breathing, and your sinus is dripping bad, and it's not dripping on the outside, it's dripping on the inside.
Oh, dear.
And if you don't be careful with that, you can that can lead to a little touch of bronchitis, and at your age, you could get a touch of pneumonia as well. So I ain't ready to lose my friend.
And, I could die.
I don't want that to happen to you, David.
Well, you know, I must give you full marks for being able to diagnose your patient from such a distance. I'm very impressed.
A wise man can play a fool's part, but a fool will not be able to play a wise man's part.
My suspicion is that you really should be about changing your profession.
No, I ain't got no money now to go and study in medicine now.
But the way that you diagnosed me just now, you don't need to study.
Let me tell you something, right? Let me tell you something, and you from the old school. It is always the man that people will look down on is the man that have the solutions. And the man that just push up in the air and bragging how much degree they got and how much time they spent at university is break up a place. You know that. Huh?
I don't know that.
Don't come to me with that, David. I'm not saying I'm not ridiculing the people that have their qualifications, because people will get the qualifications to help themselves and the family, and because they may be in a job too, and they don't want to be overlooked. And I give them kudos for that. But at the same time, I am not an idiot either, but I did not went to the University of the West Indies, but I have certain qualifications as well, and
What did you call about today?
All right, David, let me go down the road. First thing first, I want to look at something there now, this road network. And all we get it is, this is going to happen, and the next is going to happen, and then we're still seeing some holes. Well, last night I was went out with a friend of mine to get a couple of things, and we passed through that area there by the popular there in Kendall Hill, and we went up through Silver Hill into Gore Hill, and we dropped it a hole, my goodness, and broke the tire there up on the left side. He shunned some, but he couldn't miss that one, and the one that he dropped in, it shattered the whole car, and I feel that we have to get a shock this morning. I mean, these holes are ridiculous, and this is not now that people have been complaining about these holes. It's a long time.
Why do you believe that the government is having such a difficulty fixing it?
Because the money that was allocated for certain things, they keep taking it and doing things that they should not do. And that is the problem.
Like
in
what?
This country.
Like what?
Huh?
If you make that charge, then you have to support it. What is it that the money has been diverted to?
Let me show you something here now, right? You go back, and I'm not pulling away nothing. Now, the transport board suffering. No busing by. But still you had a man in there getting money when the month come that I believe that he was way overpaid. You know what I'm talking about?
But I'm not even so sure whether the man isn't there still. I don't know.
Yeah, but you can't be there now because that obviously...
I have had no information that the person who was being paid as the consultant is no longer there, so...
But what I'm saying to you, David, is you don't go on this road with me. I'm saying that many times money is allocated for
let's accept that a consultant was brought into the transport board and paid a high salary. And in truth and in fact, what we are seeing from the transport board does not justify paying that man that salary. Let's accept that, all right?
Right.
But beyond that, it wouldn't be enough to divert all of the money that you're talking about to that one person. So where's the other money diverted to? I don't know. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that what you're saying is wrong.
What I'm saying is I don't want to say use misappropriation.
No, I don't want you to say so either. But you know, I don't want you to say that either.
But what I'm saying is
that is not appropriate. But what I want to challenge here.
All right, but I don't want to.
You cannot come and make broad and sweeping statements without being in a position to support them. Not just because I want you to.
I know, but I understand.
At the end of the day, there are so many other people who are listening to you who want something to go with. So to tell me the reason why we have potholes in the road is because money that had been allocated for this purpose has been diverted to other purposes, is not enough.
Yes, but David, you would realize that the same minister said that persons from the other side had documents that should not even be outside, flashing them at some meeting or whatever it is, that there is a procedure where Parliament is concerned that you cannot take up Parliament documents and take on the outside and flash them to each and everybody. So what I am saying to you, David,
so you got cabinet papers that you can't share with me, right? That's what you're trying to say?
But things just drop off the truck. Things just drop off, blow off the back of the truck.
Next time you talk to me, remember this. If you can't share the information, don't make the allegation. Unless I have it, I'm not going to go with you.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to you, David, listen to me carefully, right? This country depends on taxes. I don't have a problem with taxes, David.
Let's go where we can agree. We can agree on this particular point. We can agree that the roads are in a poor state. Let's accept that as a given.
Very poor,
all right? That there are many places in Barbados where it cannot just be argued that there's been a lot of rain, because Barbados is not the only country in the world where there's a lot of rain.
That is true.
You know, other people have been able to keep their roads in a good state. And this in the first year or the first 2 years that Barbados has had a lot of rain. There were other years when we had a lot of rain, and our roads were not in such a state.
You understand where I'm going now.
Okay. So what we are seeing here is a weakness that comes right back to the overall state of government's finances, government's planning, and government's implementation. To me, that is what it is saying to us, that this is an area of weakness, because if you can't keep your roads in a good state, then you are also spending a lot of money on repairing vehicles. And when you do that, you're also bringing in more parts, perhaps, than you need to.
Yeah, but David, let me tell you something now. Let me put in this one here, right? Now, look at Lexington Authority, and because that's in collaboration with MPW, right or wrong? Them is work close with one another, right? Ah, David?
Yeah.
Now, you have do an estimated thing from Sensi Road that's moved from 265 or whatever for the regular car to 400. I will let you to do the mathematics and see that they get more than $90-something million a year. And that is only one government entity. So you cannot come to John Public all the time and say you do not have no money, David. You remember the year when they put noticeable tax, which people call the solid waste tax. How much millions was collected off of that? Are you still going to take up national insurance money to do X and to do Y? And then when you have Sherman's, you know, as you rightfully said, when certain people do something, you're holler for murder and do bad. But we have people in this place who are so supposed to be protecting Barbados and Barbadians so that we can have a good life. And they're taking the hard-earned taxpayers' money and doing as they like. And that cannot be right. It cannot be business as usual, because it is filtering down to all people that have to live in this place we call home, David. And I know you understand where I'm going.
Yeah, but one of the problems that we sometimes try to avoid is we will complain about this today. We may fix the problem tomorrow, but not well enough to stop it recurring in the not-too-distant future. That's where I would like to take a lot of the discussion about the problems that Barbados faces. I saw a piece this morning written by the former governor of the Central Bank talking about the degree to which the inefficiency of the public service, the government system, has hurt Barbados. He feels, for instance, that if a lot of the projects, remember he used to come every year telling us that there was going to be an improvement because this and that project was going to start. Well, that was pie in the sky, because it never did. And so now in retrospect, what he says is that if these projects had started, it would have made such a fundamental difference to the Barbados economy. Then he traces the failure to start these projects to governmental inefficiency. We got too many people in government in the first place, and those who exist are just not working in a way that is internationally competitive. Now, how are we going to fix that? If that is a reality, if that is our truth, who's talking about fixing that? Have you heard much of that from the people who make themselves available for a political office?
No, you're not hearing that. What you are hearing is from people what they are going to do and what they can do and what this body did not do. I want some people to be held accountable. And where there has to be some kind of transparency and accountability now for these people you call politicians. We, these poor people in Barbados, jump up and do bad when these people are on the political platform. They come from house to house and they promise you X or Y. The Opel tell you a promise is a comfort to a fool, David. But you cannot tell people so much lies over and over and take that people foolish. Right. We are supposed to be intelligent, educated people. So the politicians can't get away with this ignorance all the time. And I'm not only speaking about the Democratic. I speak about the Barbados Labour Party. And I speak about the whoever the new parties are.
Okay.
And everybody got to hold some kind of blame.
Thank you very much.
Accountability has to be there.
Pleasure hearing you. Down to brass tacks.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well.
Okay, fine. I want to respond to the Prime Minister when he spoke at Ellerton, I think, to the March meeting. I think he did a couple of things here. Basically, I think that was a distraction, really. I think that was a distraction. And the three projects that he spoke about, he should be virtually be ashamed to talk about those projects. When he spoke about Dawes Prisons, the Barra issue, building, and Kensington Oval, right? Just for the record. The Dawes Prison was built for $292 million with an accrued interest of $460 million, bringing it to a total of $752 million, right? The repayments are $30 million annually over a 25 period from 2007 to 2032. You have a state-of-the-art prison. What is wrong with that? There's nothing wrong at all with that. If you look at it, this government had the Swiss bank loan for $450 million. And right now, the said reserves that it was borrowed to prop up is less than when they borrowed it. Their repayment is $88 million annually. $2 million short and $90 million, which would have brought it then to three times the amount of what they have to pay for Kenyan, for the said dog prison, with nothing to show for it. Then you had the Albaric building, commonly called Albaric building. The Prime Minister said he was awarded $34 million in 2006. That was at arbitration. It went to arbitration in 2006, not the High Court. But actually, the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister, Arthur, was disappointed. He said he would take it to the High Court. But obviously, they were voted out on the 15th of January 2008. The deeds came into office and virtually did nothing. It was taken to court, and the High Court actually did award the $34 million, right? Then you had the Kensington Oval. That was refurbished for $135 million. It earned $30 million in cash. That's double the amount any Caribbean country get for the during the same World Cup. The BTA valued the advertising component at $200 million. And then again, there was activity in the build-up towards the said World Cup. Apart from the finals, Barbados hosted six of the final games. No wonder that in 2007 there were 574,000 tourist visitors, and the spending was $2.3 billion, right? The foreign reserves at that in 2007 was $1.5 billion, right? So I like to see, and look what happened here. Ever since then, they came to office, even in today's paper, the BCA have an issue with them. They have not paid the BCA, the government of Barbados have not paid the BCA a single cent since they came into office. They owe the BCA $13 million. Along with the firm from owning it, they virtually destroyed Kensington Oval. It's crappy. The BCA had to miss, Barbados had to redirect games to Guyana and the islands. So they should be ashamed to even raise these issues. And you know what's also important? You had the self-sources problem going on for 2 years when Ms. Patricia and his husband, Kensington does take less than 2 years to build, or approximately 2 years, and he can't even get a self-sources problem. So he should have been ashamed to even raise these projects.
Well, I think that the parallel with the prison is the situation with the sewage project. He says the sewage project is going to take $14 million. That's the original estimate. But it's an emergency situation, just like the prison. And it's been drawn to the government's attention now 2 years.
Yeah, it's 20.
So imagine if we had to deal with the prison.
Well, government in 3 years.
You know. So I think you compare like with like in a sense. There's two emergency situations that have to be dealt with. And we're going to wait to see in the limited time that the Democratic Labour Party has now, between now and the elections, how much can be done. What we are watching to see as well is whether this situation on the South Coast can get any worse. Because, you know, you're dealing with an environment where pressure is still being exerted on the actual environment itself, huh?
Right.
And, I mean, if you're having water underground and that sort of thing, you know, things can happen, and sewage and all of that. So there is no quick fix, as the government has been telling us from time to time. But the limited steps that are being taken, you can only take those limited steps for a short period. If you prolong them, there will be consequences of having to take those steps for too long a period. So you're waiting to see where this is going to go, because you know it's dangerous stuff.
And you know what I believe is happening here. There's twofold, right? Now, hearing the Prime Minister speak, one gets the impression that he is waiting for the 20 or how much million dollars from the OADP. It seems as though everything has a short-term, medium-term, and a long-term issue. That has a short-term, medium-term, and a long-term. So you tell me he's going to wait until he gets the money, the funds from the OADP to do anything? He should be finding a short-term measure, because it will get worse. You can't afford it. He just has his hands in the air and said, well, we'll wait until we get this money in order to do something. And you know what? You know what is their problem? They have not prioritized over the 10-year period that they were in office. They have not prioritized
I want to ask you this question, because part of the issue is the economy, and the other part of it is the politics involved. To what extent would you believe that the Democratic Labour Party has positioned itself for the elections? Because what happens traditionally is that you take tough decisions, and those decisions are usually taken in the early stages,
right,
so that towards the end of your term, you have a little bit of room, a little bit of latitude. But even if you don't have that latitude, governments have traditionally, or parties have traditionally, thrown caution to the wind, because the way that politicians think is, listen, we will deal with that later. We ain't dealing with that now. Right now, the imperative is to win the government. So whatever it takes, even if it means that you are going to spend too much and deplete the foreign reserves too much, you're going to do it, and either you can fix that problem when the time comes and you can come back to the public and tell them some piece of story about why it got so bad, or the other guy who is your opponent, that person has to come and tell the public how they're going to address the problem. You understand?
Yes.
So that's how it is. But my question to you is, when you look at, I mean, you're not a supporter of the Democratic Labour Party, and perhaps the LP people in the audience can call me and tell me what they think about this. To what extent do you believe that the Democratic Labour Party has positioned itself well to be able to capitalize on any gains over the last couple of years?